This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, I know John Gruden is feeling good after a 33-27 win over your Baltimore Ravens. Sorry about that on Monday Night Football. But did he have to invoke the cat already this close after we just saw what went down in Hard Rock Stadium at that Miami game? Like, I feel like we got to take a moment for the cats right now after that one nearly escaped death.
Yeah, we got to let the cat fiasco kind of live on its own at Hard Rock Cafe. I didn't realize that John Gruden was going to channel that right after the win, but that was a wild game yesterday, man. I mean, I felt like the Ravens could have took control at several different points in the second half, and it just didn't happen for my boys. And now they're staring down the barrel of being 0-2, knowing that they got the Kansas City Chiefs coming into town next Monday. So, I mean, I didn't realize how much and how important that game was for the Ravens last night, but all of a sudden now you're worried about their season kind of going off the rails.
Yeah, well, I think, Chris, that's twofold, right? Because as we look at now, we wrap opening weekend in the NFL. This was the last game, and this felt like kind of an important swing state when you look at especially the two divisions involved in this. We can get to the Raiders and the AFC West that quietly looks like a pretty strong outfit so far in this season, but where the Baltimore Ravens reside in the AFC North, I feel like the Pittsburgh Steelers doing what they did this year and shocking the Bills for a lot of people, coupled with all of the injuries going into that game for the Baltimore Ravens and suffered last night. I mean, it looked like a MASH unit on the field by the end of that game where they lose in overtime on a Zay Jones touchdown pass from Derek Carr. Yeah, Zay Jones, not the name you had on the bingo card for that game-winning score, Chris. I feel like you mash those two things together, and all of a sudden we're looking at that division going, all right, the Browns probably got this thing pretty clearly in the bag from the start. And we got to ask ourselves a few more questions about what this banged-up version of the Ravens is capable of.
Yeah, you just wonder at what point do the injuries become insurmountable, right? Like, that's the thing I worried about, because offensively, it was clear to me last night that they don't have a firm identity. The things that they've been working on in the preseason, the personnel that they added in the offseason, those guys, a lot of them weren't available to them last night. And you saw that Lamar Jackson was trying to do too much. And then I don't think his offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, did him any favors by opening up the set as much as he did. But that revamped revamped Las Vegas Raiders defensive line, Gus Bradley, he had those guys humming, getting off the rock, and they just put so much pressure on Lamar Jackson and made it hard for that offense to be consistent and continue to get going throughout the night, especially in the fourth quarter when they got into gotta-have-it situations.
Yeah, you mentioned that defensive line. I don't know what it says. It's simultaneously bad sign for the Raiders that your former top 10 pick in Cleveland Furl out of Clemson was a healthy scratch last night, but also apparently the wherewithal to not throw good money after bad and put Max Crosby out there with Yannick Ngakoue and let them tear that thing up. Because, Chris, that for me was the most unforeseen part about this. Like, for all the talk about Lamar Jackson and people saying they figured him out, like, no. Nothing that we watched last night, especially not the perfect summary of the Ravens. The Hollywood Brown touchdown by Lamar Jackson in the second quarter, where both tackles get beat at the same time. Lamar Jackson scrambles longer and further than 99% of other quarterbacks on earth would be able to do, and then throws that strike to Hollywood Brown. That is the perfect summary of it, because I was not ready for that offense that is revamped in a lot of its own ways, including Alejandro Villanueva coming over from the Steelers, switching from left to right side, and struggling mightily with it. And then Ronnie Stanley, their very paid left tackle, coming back off that horrific ankle injury from last year, not looking 100%. Like, Chris, if that's the foundation, the house is going to need a lot of work in other areas to try and cover up for it.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, those were the two main culprits on the offensive line last night for the Ravens. I mean, Villanueva was giving it up. The guy was like a turnstile when it came to trying to block Max Crosby. And then later in the game, Carl Nassib, who ends up getting the sack in overtime to end up shifting the tide and getting the Raiders the ball back. But and looking at that, I mean, Villanueva, two sacks, six pressures and 10 hurries. And then Ronnie Stanley, seven pressures, seven hurries. Like, that's too much to ask Lamar Jackson to overcome. And I don't understand why it took Greg Roman so long to decide to try to protect those tackles rather than leaving them out there on the island. It took him until the beginning of the fourth quarter to decide he was going to put a tight end in location or move the running backs out of the backfield and put them right there to chip on their way out into the pattern. It just took too long for them to be able to figure out that that's what they needed to do to slow down that Raiders four-man rush. And at that point, the offense had already been out of sync, and they just couldn't get back into a rhythm. So a lot of this is on Greg Roman. We heard all offseason about how the Ravens were going to have Lamar Jackson under center, utilize play action to have him turn his back to the defense, hide the football a little bit. And that lasted all of about one series. And the crazy part about it is the one time that they did do it with play action pass,
yep,
Lamar Jackson ends up scrambling for 20 yards and a first down. So it's just kind of like these little things. I don't understand why the Ravens kind of got away from some of the things that could have helped Lamar Jackson. There wasn't any screen game to speak of. They underutilized the quick passing game. I just felt like there should have been a lot more done to try to protect Lamar Jackson. And I get it. I mean, Lamar is the former MVP. The offense revolves around him. You're going to go as far as he can take you, especially with some of the injuries, some of the guys that are out of the lineup. But at some point, as the offensive coordinator and as the head coach, John Harbaugh, y'all got to realize that you got to do more to protect him, because that four-man rush for the Raiders was relentless last night.
You mentioned John Harbaugh, Baltimore Ravens head coach. Here he was after the game giving an assessment of his team's performance.
Very, very happy with the team's effort. I mean, the toughness, the resiliency, and you fight back. Even there at the end, I think the example is the goal line stand. I mean, those are the kind of things that make us who we are as a team. We just didn't close the game out when we had the opportunity to do it three or four times. And, that's what you need to do. When you have an opportunity to win, you got to go win it. And we just didn't do that tonight.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Hit us up and be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Call us 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. And Chris, I mean, he can be happy with the effort all he wants, but the execution was lacking, and I think predictable is the word that ended up doing the Ravens in, right? Because whether it was on offense, like you said, this offense became predictable in a lot of ways. The sets it was going to run, what it wasn't going to do to help out the parts. But I want your opinion as a former defensive player in this league and for this team. How much do we have to look at Wink Martindale and what happened on the other side? The Ravens' commitment to sticking with man-to-man. We heard it on every broadcast. Whichever one you decided to choose to last night, we'll get into some of the different versions of that we saw. But whatever broadcast you saw talked about his commitment to man-to-man defense that ended up being part of the reason that game was over when they got to overtime.
No question about it. I mean, Anthony Averett is not Marcus Peters. I mean, the guys that you were leaning on, as good as Tavon Young played, I mean, Derek Carr was finding him and taking advantage of him as well. Like, it's just you realize that you're not going to be able to hold up in man-to-man coverage, especially in the critical situations in that fourth quarter. There's no way that Derek Carr should have the ability to lead three game-tying drives to push that game into overtime. Like, as great as the Raiders were in those moments, as great as Derek Carr was in those moments, Wink Martindale has some blame in all of this as well. Like, I realize that you've got a tough situation. You're robbing Peter to pay Paul because you don't necessarily have the horses up front to be able to win in the four-man rush. You're trying to manufacture pressure by being able to send extra guys into the rush. But you got to also realize you're missing a big piece on the back end. Also, keep in mind, Jimmy Smith was inactive last night, so you don't have him available. So it just didn't make sense to leave those young corners out to dry the way that he did. And I understand that Marlon Humphrey is one of the best corners in the league, and you saw some of the creative things that he did with him, matching him up with Darren Waller and other guys. I thought he played an amazing game until he ran out of gas in overtime. But I just didn't understand why Wink was relying on those guys to hold up one-on-one, especially when you had a lead in the fourth quarter. That was the time to try to be more conservative, and unfortunately, they didn't do that, and the Raiders took advantage of the miscues.
The Raiders took advantage of it. They get a marquee win on Monday Night Football, 33-27 over the Ravens in overtime. We'll take your calls, 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN, on the Ravens and the Vegas Raiders, and which quarterbacks impressed you the most coming off of week one. But coming up next, one of our analysts on the ESPN radio brought up Derek Carr's name and one word that piqued my interest. We'll tell you what that word was next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming on ESPN+.
This is ESPN Radio.
Yesterday during this show, we got sudden breaking news that Clay Helton had been let go by USC, no longer the head coach of the Trojans. And it left us wondering, what kind of job is that still? What is USC in the modern college football landscape? We will talk to Bomani Jones in about 10 minutes about where that job ranks in the college football landscape here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. And we'll get to the Raiders in just a second here, but it's time for some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. We got the phone lines going here. Coming off of Monday Night Football last night, coming off the first weekend in the NFL, looking at which quarterbacks impressed you and what you thought of that performance, let's head to Jeff in Las Vegas. Jeff, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. here. What'd you make of Lamar Jackson last night?
Yeah, you had mentioned earlier in the show talking about Lamar and if his play style is something that is of a caliber for a Super Bowl kind of team. And excuse me for having to kind of cross-reference into another sport, but I kind of compare Lamar to that of Russell Westbrook, somebody who is this ultra-athletic, freak of an athlete kind of guy who puts up gaudy numbers, but his play style just doesn't fit that of a championship kind of style team. What are your thoughts on that?
I got to disagree on that one, man. I mean, Lamar checked the box of being able to win a playoff game last season. You see that the Baltimore Ravens are in the playoffs since he's been the starter every single year. So in terms of putting this team in position to contend for a championship, Lamar Jackson absolutely does that. Now, do you want to see the evolution as a downfield passer? Absolutely, but it's going to be tough for him to be able to do that when he doesn't have time to drop back and throw. And you saw last night the Oakland Raiders defense and their defensive line specifically wasn't going to let that happen.
Yeah, I think this is where the differences in the sports show up so much, because Lamar Jackson plays a position that is still partially dependent on what happens around him. We've seen he can elevate that to a certain point. I'm sure the kind of association dude was going for was the fact that Russell Westbrook plays a style of basketball without a three-point shot largely that doesn't vibe with the way modern basketball gets played and has success. Lamar Jackson is still, A, young enough in his career, and B, already accomplished enough in being a downfield passer to have won an MVP in this, that Chris, I just can't rock with that all the way. I understand where he was going, but we're just not there.
Well, here's the thing. Lamar Jackson and his athleticism is where the NFL is going as far as the quarterback position is concerned. Like, you have to have a dual threat guy. Like, Steve Young talks about it all the time. There's a lot of free yards out there based on the rules of the game today, and you need a quarterback to be able to take advantage of them. I mean, Lamar Jackson is right at the top of the list in terms of being that threat to opposing defenses. And take it from a guy that played defensive line for over a decade in the NFL, having to game plan for a quarterback that has Lamar Jackson's skill set is a nightmare. You saw it last night in that Raiders game. I mean, you can't play cover five. You can't play two-man when Lamar Jackson is the quarterback. Because you know what? As soon as those linebackers and those DBs turn their backs to take their responsibilities in man coverage, Lamar Jackson has the ability to take off and beat you for 20, 30 yards. That is the ability that Lamar Jackson has. That's what makes him special. That's what separates him from the typical pocket passers that we've seen in yesteryear in the NFL.
Let's get one more in. Don in Indiana. Don, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What do you got?
Yes. Hey, I bleed black and gold. I just want to ask you real quick, AFC North, who do you think is going to win it after 1 week?
Yeah,
I got to tell you, it's the team that has an L in the column already. It's the Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I understand that the Pittsburgh Steelers had an impressive road win against the Bills. They still got some question marks, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I don't know how you can have confidence in the Baltimore Ravens, and the Cincinnati Bengals just ain't there yet. So I think the Cleveland Browns, by default, essentially, are going to be the team that's in the driver's seat for the AFC North crown.
Yeah, Chris, you and I were both critical of this idea that yesterday or this weekend should have been a moral victory for the Browns, but it's still a really good football team. They are sound in the ways that you need to be. You just need to cash in on a few more of those critical moments. So I'm with you. This is the Browns to lose, and I don't think it's very close where we sit right now. Canty and Golic Jr., that is Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Now, speaking of Straight Talk, Chris, I want to play this for you. Keyshawn Johnson, co-host of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning, was talking about Monday Night Football and brought up Derek Carr. This is what Keyshawn had to say about Derek Carr and how he views the quarterback of the Las Vegas Raiders.
People don't feel like Carr is an elite quarterback in the National Football League. I know what I see. It's
elite?
Funny to
you
me.
See elite?
I see an elite quarterback. What the hell's wrong with him? I mean, when you look at the way he played last night, he threw the ball around 56 times, but you got Waller on a corner route down the sideline. He puts up one hand to try to get a poster. If you catch it with two hands, that's another completion.
Yeah.
Why did you even remotely try to catch it with one hand? Just for what? So when you start to look at that, the interception in the end and the overtime, that's not a car deal. It went through a dude's hands like it was an open net. When you start to look at things, you got to know what you're looking at. Don't get caught up in the hype about who's on the commercials and who likes what. Don't get caught up in that.
Guys, that's what was so impressive to me.
Don't get caught up in that.
Derek Carr elite. This feels like new Joe Flacco territory, Chris.
Yeah, I don't know if I could rock with Keyshawn on that one. I don't think Derek Carr is elite. Is he one of the best top 10, top 12 quarterbacks in the NFL? I can maybe get with that, but I feel like Derek Carr is that line of demarcation that separates those good, really good quarterbacks and elite quarterbacks from the rest of the pack. Like, I feel like that's where Derek Carr is. Like, if you have a quarterback that's better than Derek Carr, chances are he's a guy that you want to lock into long term. If you have a quarterback that's beneath Derek Carr, chances are you're always going to be looking around for the next best thing. So I feel like Derek Carr is right in that spot. No disrespect to him. I thought he played magnificent last night. He was outstanding, especially in the second half in the overtime. But I don't think that Derek Carr has gotten into that elite territory where you want to put quarterbacks like Patty Mahomes and Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. I don't think he's in that conversation.
No, I think people misconstrue. Like, Derek Carr is a very good quarterback, probably better than he gets credit for in a lot of instances. We're trying to reserve the E word for people that are actually up in that category. Like, the name that instantly popped into mind for me, Chris, just because we were talking about him, you take Baker Mayfield over Derek Carr tomorrow, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, absolutely. So, I mean, I think that's the point that we're talking about. But we reserve the E word for top five, top six quarterbacks in the National Football League. Unless you're Tom Brady, Dak Prescott, or the aforementioned three guys that I threw out there, you don't need to be mentioned in that conversation as being elite.
Yeah, if you're going to be in the Hall of Very Good, we don't got to worry about that word getting tossed around with this. You can hit us up still, 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. Talking about Monday Night Football, the quarterbacks that impressed you most this last weekend, and more. But coming up next, as we head back to college, USC is looking for a head coach. How many head coaches are looking at SC and saying that's a top five job in college football? We'll get to that next after this word from DraftKings. Now, man, oh man, is it good to see teams back out there getting after it on the gridiron. And lucky for us, that was just week one. DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL, is putting you in the center of the action for week two. New customers can get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes, all with their first deposit, by signing up using the code CJR. Get in on the action now. It's simple. You just pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Feel the NFL action like never before with a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. All you got to do, download the DraftKings app now and use code CJR. This week, new customers can get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. Enter code CJR to get a free shot at millions in total prizes, all with your first deposit. That's code CJR, only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Back with Bomani Jones next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Oh, man. Chris, I can see this Derek Carr elite conversation is going to be the death of us here already, because the phone lines are swole and apparently people are hot and bothered about Derek Carr. Who knew?
Do people feel like we're throwing shade at Derek Carr?
I guess.
I mean, we've done nothing but compliment the way that he played last night, and we talked about how after he shook off the rust, the guy was money pretty much the entire night. I mean, if you want to try to pin that interception on him in overtime, I don't think that's his fault. That's Willie Snead. He's got to come up with that catch for his team. And even beyond that, how about Alex Leatherwood not jump offside? So to me, once we got out of that first quarter, Derek Carr pretty much played a flawless game.
Listen, I thought we were more than complimentary, especially given the quarterback we're talking about. But 888-SAY-ESPN, we'll get to your calls in about 10 minutes here. But by the way, yesterday, for anyone that missed it on this show, we found out the news that USC had fired their head coach, Clay Helton. They are looking to break moves and hopefully hire a new one probably in the next 3 months.
Breaking Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports.
But we've got a full fall full of coaching search for USC, but it did bring up a conversation about what the USC job is now in the current landscape. And for more on that, we're going to head to the the Goodyear hotline to talk to the host of The Right Time with Bomani Jones. With us here now is Bomani Jones. But before we get to that, Bo, I got to ask you, because I saw this earlier, as a connoisseur of Bofa jokes from time to time, how did you feel or did you see the clip of Alabama defensive back Jordan Battle outing Nick Saban as a D's jokes guy?
So I think we had heard that before about Nick Saban, but it's really funny because somebody had sent that to me, and I was trying to check it out on the train, but I couldn't. And now you just went and messed it up for me. But we are on the good times hotline, though, so you know what I'm saying. I that seems up Saban's wheelhouse, because I imagine the first time he did it, he's like, no one's ever laughed at anything I've ever said this hard ever again. I got to keep this as my thing.
He's got an ace in the hole, and he's not going to let it go. I got to respect it, and I have a feeling Nick Saban, of anyone, will find a way to cash in on this being out there now. So, Bo, before we figure out if we're ever going to hear from that young man again, I saw you tweeting about this USC job. Looking at this right now in the landscape of college football, what kind of job is USC? Is this still one of the three, five best jobs in the sport?
Well, it's a high-ceiling job. I think the question is, who do you have to be the person to make it run? Like, let's not forget, we had buried USC, and it'll never be like that again, and they had to hire their fifth choice or something like that, and they got Pete Carroll, and he was absolutely the perfect person for the job. The question I have about that job is the same question I have about Texas. It's basically the same question I have about any job other than LSU, where the expectation is we have all these great players that live right close to us, and if we just get a bunch of them, then we'll be able to be good. I'm not sure you can win like that anymore. Like, you go look it up and see who's winning and where they're getting their players from. It's a real national game in that respect. And so if your expectation is we're just going to lock down what's local, I don't think that works like it used to.
Bo, let me ask you this question, because everybody's quick to scapegoat Clay Helton as the guy that's responsible for the state of affairs with this program. But does Bone's predecessor, Lynn Swann, deserve some blame in the state of where USC football is right now?
Oh, yeah, a whole lot of people do. One thing you can't blame a dude for doing is taking a job he ain't got no business having, right? Like, Clay Helton, and they come up to you and they're like, would you like the job? Yeah, I would love it. And then they're like, would you like an extension? I'd love that even more, right? Like, that's not his fault. And he seems to be a really, really good dude. This was just a bigger job than he was prepared for, and that falls on the administration. Now, don't forget, they got that giant lawsuit that they have to settle at USC. Their money situation isn't great, and a thing that all these California schools have to deal with is it's very difficult for them to pay what are truly competitive salaries for assistants, because what is a great salary in, say, Starkville, Mississippi? You got a roommate in California. And these are the problems that these schools have out there financially. It's just like, how do you pay for the little things? Like, part of why Alabama is so good is they got the money for anything that'll make the football better. It's not that easy to do it in that way at USC.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to Bomani Jones, host of The Right Time, wherever you get your podcasts. And, Bo, we've already started to see people just floating out the names that we knew were going to be out there. James Franklin, Bob Stoops, Luke Fickell, who Bone hired at his previous job at Cincinnati. Is there a name you've seen so far that makes sense given where this program is right now?
I think Franklin probably makes the most sense. And, I mean, let's not make this too complex, man. That dude won at Vanderbilt. I don't feel like I need to say anything else in my job interview. After I say that, dog, I won at Vanderbilt. And I also think part of the tradition of USC has always been running a pro-style sort of offense. And I think one of the difficulties they've had in recent times is that they've got to move off that because the game has moved off that. Like, you can't just be like, I'm going to go get the, find a handsome 6'4 white quarterback from private school in Southern California and boom, we've taken care of that. You can't play that kind of game anymore. And they started last year trying to move away from that. They stuck with the private school part, but they got Bryce Young and then just couldn't keep the commitment with him. So Franklin, who is at his core kind of a pro-style West Coast offense guy, but has moved his offenses into the future as they're needed and is a great recruiter, I think that would be the number one guy for me. The question I have, if you want to bring Fickell there, is I think that Fickell can do work in the state of Ohio. I don't know if he's the guy to coach at USC.
Bo, with the Pac-12 set to renegotiate their media rights deals in the next couple of years, how important is it for USC to make sure that they get this coaching hire right?
Oh, for the rest of the conference, it's huge. Like, our perceptions of what kind of conference this Pac-12 is really has to do with what we think about USC and then, like, some smattering of Oregon, Stanford, Washington, you know, when they can kind of get that thing going. Like, that is when we start talking about whether or not the Pac-12 is good. But the expectation is that USC is going to carry the banner for the rest of the conference. They are, if they're good, they're interesting. If they're interesting, people watch them. They go play intersectional games that people go check out. So I think for the Pac-12, it's very, very big to get USC back into a place of being competitive.
Bo, I'm going to put this on you in real time because Adam Schefter just tweeted this about 5 minutes ago saying league sources believe Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy will emerge as a head coaching candidate for USC. How does that land with you?
Do you know the last time USC had a black quarterback? I'm just curious.
I do not.
Rodney Pete.
That's a long time ago.
After I say they should hire James Franklin, I'm just saying that it would be very surprising to me if they were to hire Eric Bieniemy as their head coach, given that small little detail that is there. And I think he could probably do good work. He's from LA, and he's from, like, you know, you got to be able to recruit in a couple different LAs if you're going to make this work at USC. And he can recruit in both of them, if you know what I mean. I think it would wind up being good. Can he pass the booster test? That remains to be seen. Franklin is a guy I think that can pass the booster test. I'm not sure this one will.
Bo, yesterday in social media, Damani Jackson, their five-star cornerback that's committed to SC, came out and said that he's going to stay committed to the program. In the short term, are they going to get this thing, be able to get this thing turned around in terms of recruiting in Southern California?
I mean, I would think that they could. Like, there was a year a couple years ago where I don't think they got but one maybe of the top 25 players in the state of California to go to USC. Like, everybody's eating off of them. It's the same situation that Texas has wound up with, where everybody came into your backyard and is eating off you, and you're not getting the guys that you used to. But if I haven't lived in California in a long time, but unless something drastically has changed, that's the school that dudes from L.A. want to go to and want to play at. And so if they did make a decision that we're going to get on the ground, we're going to get in on these guys early, then they could probably get the level of talent that's necessary to keep that going. And in this new world of name, image, and likeness, man, if, like, imagine if Reggie Bush had gone to USC now, how much money he would have made. Well, basically, every deal that Reggie Bush had as a rookie in the NFL, he would have had as a junior at USC. If the right guy goes there, I mean, it can be a very, very attractive job.
That is Bomani Jones. You can check him out on The Right Time with Bomani Jones wherever you get your podcast, or on the Good Times hotline here. Bo, we appreciate the time, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. You guys be good.
And that is, there's a lot of interesting there. Again, that Adam Schefter tweet I saw just scrolling the timeline during this caught me off guard a bit. But what Bomani said about the booster test, it is going to be very interesting to see, based on how this hire pans out, who is making the decisions there in Southern California. So we have plenty more time to get to that. But coming up next, 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. We'll get to some of your calls on Derek Carr being elite, and where we're at with Baker Mayfield now entering an important year for him here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs. For protection on the road and on the water, see how much you can save in as little as 3 minutes at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Super Bowl champ Chris Canty. We'll get to it. It's Tuesday again around here, which means we got the top five and bottom five things you saw from the NFL weekend that was. We'll hit you with that list coming up starting at 5 o'clock Eastern. But, man, we played a clip from Keyshawn Johnson on KJM earlier talking about Derek Carr being elite, and somehow during the last break, that has devolved into a retroactive conversation about is Matt Ryan or was Matt Ryan ever elite? And Cliff, our great producer here, is absolutely bothered on behalf of Matt Ryan.
So let me get this straight, because Chris disagreed with me on this. I said Cam was elite at some point in his career because in 2015 he won MVP. But you can put Dak Prescott in elite status and who hasn't won anything? Has Dak won a playoff game? He's won a playoff game.
Yeah, he checked that box.
So how's the elite company when Cam went to a Super Bowl and lost it?
He won Offensive Rookie of the Year. I get that Cam went to the Super Bowl in that 1 year. But to me, when you start jumping into that elite category, like, context matters. I need more than just one season.
What have you got
when it comes
to
your body of work? I'm talking about with Dak Prescott is what he's done in the last six games that we've seen him healthy.
Six games? Cam Newton did it for like like two, three seasons.
Listen to me, Cliff. The last six games, what we've seen him do. But since he came to the league in 2016, the floor for the Dallas Cowboys when Dak Prescott is healthy is 8-8. You can't say that about Cam Newton, even when he was in his prime down there in Carolina. So
didn't
I'm sorry.
12 games? Didn't they go 12-4 to Super Bowl year?
Dak Prescott is in that elite category now. And you said Dak might not have an MVP in his trophy case. But let's just see how this 2021 season unfolds, because based on what we saw Thursday night against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a defense of the reigning defending champs, he shredded those dudes, 42 completions, over 400 yards and three touchdowns.
I want
so
our
just
producer,
chill out yep. when it comes to the Dak Prescott slander. I'm putting him in that elite category for a good reason.
All right, I want our producer Jerry to cut this segment right here and hold off on this until February, until the season is done, because you can't tell me Cam wasn't elite status, who won an MVP, rookie of the year, all that. Meanwhile, Dak Prescott hasn't won anything.
So
Has he even won a passing title?
This seems like an elite projection. He is elite right now, I would say, at this point in time, and it's going forward. Cliff, I feel like your jaw is showing
At what this point?
What is Dak Prescott he's looking at this thing through those Philadelphia Eagles colored lenses.
That's what
he's doing right now. Because you can't name me six quarterbacks that are better than Dak Prescott.
I can't off the top of my head right now.
Okay, give it to me. Who are the six quarterbacks in your mind that are better than Dak Prescott? I'm going to give you a minute to think about six quarterbacks right here while we take this call.
We've got Canada on the Goodyear hotline from North Carolina. Canada, do you think Derek Carr is elite?
Most people will argue that Matthew Stafford is elite. And if you compare those two stats over the years, guess what? They're exactly the same.
Yeah, and I get
that. So I'm trying to figure out how do you say Stafford is elite, and by far Stafford had more offensive help, if you just say Megatron, than Derek Carr ever can even think of.
Yeah, listen, I agree with you on that front. Chris, to me, this with Matt Stafford always felt like an ability thing, right? Like, we know all the ability there, and we know while he may have had help, he still played for the Detroit Lions, and that is an anchor that very few people can swim to the surface carrying.
No question about it. I mean, that's the organization that made Megatron and Barry Sanders retired when the guys were in the heart of their prime. So, when you look at the dysfunction that's been around Detroit, like you're willing to give Matt Stafford a pass when it comes to having a high level of success, especially when it comes to the postseason. But in my book, I've never had Matt Stafford as an elite quarterback. Maybe elite when it comes to arm talent, but not when it comes to overall quarterback play. And with Derek Carr, you can make the argument that he's had a better supporting cast during the duration of his career than Matt Stafford ever had. So I don't know. Both of those guys are on the outside looking in when it comes to the elite conversation.
Matt Stafford, not elite. Somewhere Dan Orlovsky's ears are burning right now. All right, Cliff, I've given you some time here, and we'll get to more of your calls. 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. We are Canty and Golic Jr. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. And Cliff was given the task of naming, was it six quarterbacks better
That's
than
it.
Dak Prescott right now. Cliff, have you had time to compile a list?
Yes, I have a list. Mahomes, Brady, Rodgers, Josh Allen, Russell Wilson, Kyler, to name six that I like.
Wow, Kyler Murray is better. I like Matt Stafford.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Kyler Murray is better than Dak Prescott. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a hot take on a Tuesday. I didn't see that one coming.
After what I saw Kyler do on Sunday, I'm sold, baby. I'm good.
So you're willing to assign that to Kyler Murray after what he did on Sunday.
I forgot about Lamar, too. I'm tripping. I forgot about Lamar Jackson.
Stop yourself. Lamar MVP.
All right.
Well, that's not according to Jeremy Fowler and all the execs around the NFL that he polled in the preseason about what the quarterback rankings were for this year. And if you remember those rankings, Dak Prescott was one spot ahead of one Tom Brady, and it felt like that on Thursday night in that kickoff game.
That just proves that they need me in that room to have some better deliberation.
Come on, bro. It's so much hate in your heart, Cliff, because you're an Eagles fan toward Dak Prescott. Man, I'm telling you, you got to get that hate out your heart, bro. It doesn't look good on you.
It's not cute right now is what it is here.
Not at all.
All right, so that's Cliff's list of quarterbacks better than Dak Prescott here. 888-729-3776. Kyler Murray or Dak Prescott seems like an interesting prop bet for the 2021 season. We'll get to that and see if either made our top five, bottom five next on ESPN Radio.